You are listening to the Just Chill Parenting Podcast. I am your host, Rosie Davidson, an infant sleep consultant, author, and mum of three. This is a show all about honest chat where I talk about my favourite topic, sleep, of course, but I will also be covering your burning parenting questions and speak to some very special guests along the way. So buckle up and enjoy! In this episode, I wanted to talk to you all about my favourite charity, the NSPCC. This charity do so much amazing work, which is why I work for them as a campaigner for childhood. Parenting can be tough, but whatever family life brings, the NSPCC are here for parents and carers of all age groups. You can get support via their brand new parenting pages. Head over to www.nspcc.org.uk to get support with whatever challenges you're facing right now. Hello and welcome to the Just Chill Parenting Podcast. This week, I'm going to delve deep into a round of true or false questions that you guys have sent in to me via Instagram. If you don't follow me over there, I am at just_chill_mama. I wanted a chance to really get into the nitty gritty of some common myths or things that tend to leave parents feeling puzzled, frazzled, and confused. I think it can be so hard with so many conflicting voices out there, including professionals, friends, family, all sorts of sources that we get our information from. So this is a place that you can come for evidence-based, accurate information. Let's get started. The first one, and I hear this a lot, is never wake a sleeping baby. Now, I don't know where this has come from, and lots of people, especially the older generation, in my experience, I find them saying, oh, but they're so peaceful. It feels really mean. And actually, a previous podcast that I did with Dan, my husband, you may have heard him say how when he first became a parent, he almost found it quite mean, the idea of waking the babies up. But I'm going to talk to you a bit about why it's not true. So the first reason is sometimes when some babies are born, they're quite sleepy, and there's lots of different potential reasons for that. Jaundice is one that can make them quite sleepy. And all of my babies were jaundiced when they were born. And there's lots of other reasons. So sometimes we need to wake them to feed because they wouldn't necessarily wake themselves. And that is really important. And we need to keep waking them throughout the night as newborns until they have returned to birth weight. Once they've returned to birth weight, and if you're in the UK, you'll know this because you should have a midwife coming to weigh the baby, or you're going to a weight clinic. If you're elsewhere, you may have another system. Speak to your paediatrician or your care team that you're under. But once they are back to their birth weight and there's no other health concerns and no other reason that you should be waking them, you can let them sleep in the night and enjoy it because it might change. But sometimes there are some babies, I call them unicorn babies, who sleep through the night from really young, and that is okay. But what I would say is even if you've got a baby like that, I would wake them regularly throughout the day to make sure that they are having all the feeds that they need. Ideally, we want to get your baby in a cycle where they're having most of their feeds in the day. It's absolutely fine to still be doing night feeds, but we don't want to get it where the balance is completely off and they're waking loads at night and hardly waking in the day. We want to kind of reverse that if that's what's happening. Other situations where we might wake our babies. Number one, if you've got to go somewhere, I mean, let's face it, if your baby's going to nursery or you need to get out to be somewhere, drop other children at school, or you might be going back to work. There's lots of different reasons. Everyone has different lifestyles. And if you need to wake them, that's also fine. The other reason is you may be trying to fit their naps in the day. So sometimes if we don't wake them up from a morning nap, for example, they might nap really long. You might have a baby that does a 3-hour nap, for example, and then won't go down for another nap. So then by the time they get to bedtime, they're really frazzled, really aggy, and really hard to settle. And then you have a more disturbed night. So you might want to wake them from their first nap so that you can fit in a second nap. And that might be the same if you're on three naps. Or, for example, my toddler. So my son is just over 2.5. And most days he doesn't nap. But sometimes he might nap if he fell asleep in the car or there was another scenario where he just nodded off. In which case, I would let him have about 20 minutes. And there's a good reason why I wouldn't let him have more than that, because he'd be up until 10:30 at night. And I'm trying to get to bed earlier, and that doesn't work for our family. So I would be waking him so that he can go to bed okay. And as he grows in the next 6 months, that will probably stop happening. But if, for example, we were driving home from somewhere at 6 p.m, it's likely he would probably fall asleep and stay asleep as long as it was until we woke him up. So you can see, we might wake our little ones up to protect their next nap or to protect bedtime. So those are reasons why I don't think never wake a sleeping baby is necessarily true. As I always say, we have to do things that work for us and our families. And if that's a belief or something you feel really strongly about, of course you don't have to wake your baby, but just have those things in mind. And if somebody says it to you, you've now got some ammunition of things that you can say to them why you might want to be waking your baby up. Next question. Crying can be a baby's way to self-soothe. Right, so there's a couple of things to unpick here. And the first one I'm going to talk about is self-soothing. The concept of this, I think, can get quite confused. The word soothe, we tend to talk about self-soothing as being able to calm ourselves and our nervous systems, which generally babies and small children can't do. That is very different to helping facilitate sleep for your baby. And by that, I mean helping them to fall asleep themselves in their own sleep space with minimal intervention from you. And as they grow, aiming to have less and less intervention. Intervention is fine. Intervention could be rocking, cuddling, feeding, bouncing, all these things we do to get our babies to sleep. And teaching them how to do that themselves is something we can do, and it's perfectly valid, but it's different to self-soothing. I would call it self-settling. So there's a bit of nuance in the words, and a lot of anti-sleep training or anti-sleep work people say you can't teach babies or children to self-soothe, and actually lots of adults don't know how to self-soothe. It's something that comes with age, definitely, but also being given the tools to know how to do it. So when we talk about self-soothing behaviours, actually a lot of adults don't do it, and they might use things like alcohol, food, TV, drugs. There's lots of things that people use to self-soothe their nervous systems. So it's a really different and a whole other topic. But if we take this as in self-settling, crying can be a way of babies self-settling, I would kind of say yes. The reason I say that is because some babies will just cry. You can do everything and there'll be some crying. They might be crying if you're holding them. They might be crying if they're in the car. You might be rocking them and they'd be crying. They're just crying because they're just telling you, I'm tired, I'm aggy, something's wrong, because crying is a form of communication. And some babies for some time will cry a little bit before they go to sleep. I've had many times with my own babies where I was walking them around the block and they're crying because they're tired. But I don't change what I'm doing. I don't stop walking. Well, actually, maybe I did when they were newborns. I'd be like, oh God, they need to get on the boob. But on the whole, we just carry on with what we're doing and support them through that crying. And that's perfectly fine. And that support might look like, okay, we're going to revert to cuddling, or we're going to revert to rocking them. Or it might be about supporting them to sleep in their sleep space and being with them. Or it might be returning at intervals, and that's for slightly older ones. So is crying a way of them self-settling? Sometimes, but it's more generally part of the process, I would say, if you're changing boundaries, as in how they fall asleep, there can be crying involved with that. And there are some of these particular babies who will always cry a little bit before they go to sleep and eventually they grow out of it, but it doesn't necessarily mean there's anything wrong. Are they self-soothing? Probably not, depending how you interpret that word. But are they self-settling? Yes, if they're going to sleep themselves. That is self-settling. The next, true or false. I forgot these were true and false. You are traumatizing your child if you sleep train. I think that's false. I think that's a massive false. And I think it's a falsehood that sets us up to fail. Really sweeping, negative, guilt-riddled phrases like this set us up to fail because we know it's not realistic to have a baby or a child or an adult who is happy and content all of the time. Whether you sleep train or not is absolutely your God-given choice. You don't have to sleep train, but I want people to know that it is a legitimate method to improve your days and your nights and generally your life if you choose to. If it's not for you, you don't have to do it. And there are loads of things we can do to work on sleep in a gentle fashion if you don't want to sleep train. But when we put it under this really blanket statement, you would think that these caring, loving parents who want to help their baby sleep are doing something awful. I want you to know you don't have to deal with sleep deprivation long term. Your baby isn't broken, but there isn't one secret or one magic wand that I can wave. I wish there was, that necessarily made it an easy process. But for some people, it can be an easy process. Sometimes tweaking your daytime routine, sometimes being a little bit more hands-off or working on a gradual method to reduce your input at bedtime can make a huge difference to you and your child. For other babies and children, those of more, I would call them a sensitive temperament, so their personalities, they're a bit more sensitive, they might need a gradual method. And that might not look like what you would think sleep training is, but I would still call it sleep training. So it might be that you're very gradually reducing your input at bedtime or your presence at bedtime. Or you might be moving very gradually from rocking them to sleep to holding them to sleep to holding their hand to patting them to gradually moving your chair out of the room, as an example. And I really don't know how anyone can say that that is traumatizing. So I think people think if there's lots of crying, that might be where this potential trauma comes from. Now, I want you to know, first of all, that babies are very resilient. And I think sometimes we don't give them credit for that. I'm not going to tell you to leave your baby crying for hours. Absolutely not. But I don't think that the process needs to be traumatizing. I think that we need to be prepared and open-minded that our children might let us know that they're upset, but we can sit with them in that upset. And it's a massive myth that just generally sleep training is traumatizing. It's just not. I think that it's actually a really positive move for most families. But at the end of the day, you have to make the choice. You have to decide whether it's for you or not. But for the parents who are considering it or want to do it, I want them to know that in a caring, loving home where your presence is clearly there and they know that you come back, I don't believe that that will trigger a trauma response. Next one, sleep breeds sleep. False, false, massive false. This one does me in. This one just sends me under. Sleep breeds sleep. The reason this one just absolutely gets under my skin is because as human beings, whatever your age is, from newborn to very oldest age, we have a sleep requirement. That sleep requirement might change slightly, but on the most part, it will stay similar. Babies need more sleep than adults, obviously. But let's just say we take a baby who sleeps for maybe 3 hours in the day and maybe 11 hours at night, just as an example. That means they sleep for 14 hours within 24 hours, and that is likely to be their sleep requirement. The human brain is really clever. It will organise sleep. We don't have to worry about it. The sleep that we're getting, the brain will naturally organise whether we're having deep or light sleep, and it will sort it all out and we'll get the sleep we need, unless there's something getting in the way. But our sleep requirement doesn't change and we can't change it. So, for example, if that baby suddenly started sleeping 5 hours in the day, they might sleep 2 hours less at night. On the whole, this is how it works. Normally, if they're napping too long in the day, it will have a negative impact on night sleep. You can't make more sleep from sleep. It just is biologically impossible. So if somebody uses this phrase, it has to be in context. And what I think people mean, and the only way that I can make this make sense, is if you have a baby who doesn't self-settle, who might do a 10-minute contact nap, then they start in the wake. Then you try again in an hour, then they do 20 minutes. Then they might do an hour in a sling. Then they might do another 10 minutes here, there and everywhere. They don't self-settle. So at bedtime, they go to sleep. They wake up after 45 minutes. And you're up, down, all around, all through the night. Then you work on sleep. They learn how to self-settle. Suddenly, they're doing an hour nap in the morning. And maybe, not all babies, so please don't worry about this. Just an example, they might do 2 hours at lunch. And they're sleeping through the night. That doesn't mean they are taking more sleep over 24 hours. What it means is the sleep isn't broken and they're getting themselves to sleep and they're not requesting your assistance through the night because they know how to do it themselves. So I think people say it because they're like, oh, they're napping really well in the day now. So it means they're sleeping more at night. They're not. It's just not broken and they're doing it without your assistance. We still all stir at night between sleep cycles. We might not fully rouse, and maybe before they were fully waking up and crying or calling out for you, and now they're not because they cycle between their sleep cycles without your help or not even waking up. Like I, for example, for some reason, and I'm absolutely loving it, I am sleeping like the dead. I go to sleep and I do not stir until the morning when I hear a child or an alarm goes off. I love nights like those, but my body is still going through sleep cycles and I'm still coming into a light sleep. It doesn't mean I'm waking up. So sleep doesn't breed sleep. No, you can't make more sleep from sleep. It's biologically impossible. But if you're talking about does working on day sleep help night sleep? Absolutely, yes. So on its own, isolated, the phrase is a massive, massive false. But if you put it in context and actually explain what you mean, maybe it's true. Next one, the lunchtime nap should be done at home in their cot. False. You don't have to do this. Number one, it might not suit your lifestyle or your work. And sometimes we don't have a choice. So no, absolutely doesn't have to be. What I would say, if you've decided to work on sleep and you want to get a more settled night and you want them falling asleep independently, then trying to do at least one nap a day in a cot, if that's what they're sleeping in at night, can help support the work you're doing at night. But I want to caveat that and say it's not essential, because I have worked with families where all the naps either in a buggy, a sling or a contact nap, and bedtimes they're still able to get them to sleep in a cot or a bed. And that is okay for some families. For other families, it works to try and do one nap a day or even all the naps at home in the cot. For others, it doesn't. It's about what works for the family. And when we work one-to-one with a family, we'll talk about that and explain why they should or shouldn't do it or what works for them. And we'll unpick it and work out what's going on. I always liked my babies to have at least one at home so I could do things for me. So I could have a shower, so I could eat my lunch, so I could lay on the sofa catching up on Love Island or scroll Instagram or maybe do some work. But I wanted that time for me and for them, and just to know we could chill. And then when they woke up from their nap, we could have a cuddle on the sofa, have a feed, have some milk, and then just be at home. So that worked really well for me, but it's not an essential. So I would say it's false. Next one, you can't start a routine until they are 3 months. False. You can start a routine whenever you or they are ready. And I would say with my second baby, we started a routine, actually my second and my third babies, we started a routine about 4 weeks. By routine, I'm not talking about these ones I've seen online where it's like, right, this time is a feed, this time is that. Too prescriptive for me for newborns. I mean, talk about opening a can of worms of stress. No. By routine for a newborn, I mean starting the day roughly at the same time each day and finishing the day roughly at the same time each day, having a gentle bedtime routine where it's certain things in a certain order just to get them used to it, but not worrying too much about it. And then as they grow, you should hopefully see a natural pattern starting to emerge anyway, so you don't need to stress about it. But I would say, especially having a second and a third child, they kind of had to have a bit of a routine because we had to be up and out to go to nursery or school. They didn't have a choice. They just had to come with me. So for those babies, I found that I had to have, for example, a 7 a.m. first feed of the day, because we needed to do that feed. So I had time to do the feed, to win them, to change them, to get them dressed, to get me dressed, to get the other child or children dressed and ready, get out the door and get to nursery or school. So you can see how in that scenario that worked. And with my first, when she was 3 months, we didn't have that much of a routine, and often we'd sleep in, especially if we'd had a night wake. Her and I would go back to bed after my husband left for work. So I don't know. I kind of look back on those days with a little bit of fondness, because it was nice not having a rush start to the day. But I remember it was quite lonely if you're like, oh God, we're getting up at 9:30. I haven't had any breakfast. I need to get some fresh air. And sometimes it's not the best thing for you, but you'll know that. But yeah, you can start a routine anytime you want. And if you are one of those people who does a more prescriptive routine from the early weeks and it works for you, that is all good. Next one, babies sleep better once on solids. False. There's a lot of false information out there about solids, and it's a very old-fashioned approach that filling them up will make them sleep. Sleep is about so much more than food. Our babies need to wake and feed regularly, especially when they're very little, because they have teeny tiny little tummies and they need it for energy and all the other amazing things that feeding our babies does. But weaning, and certainly weaning in the UK, weaning onto solids that is, has a really interesting history. And I know my mum's and my nan's generations introduced solids really early. I think my mum said something about my nan introduced solids to her when she was about 6 weeks old. I'm like, this is just insane. Because they had this information out there, I don't know who it was from or whether it was just what everyone did, that filling them up with food was going to help them sleep. But now we know better, so we do better. And generally, most babies will be ready for solids around the age of 6 months. We say around because each baby is individual. If you think about it, each baby is a different size, different personality. They're born at different gestations. They've got different genes. They're made up slightly differently. So some will be ready maybe before 6 months, and some will be ready after 6 months. But we should be looking for the following signs. We want them to be able to stay in a sitting position, holding their head steady. We want them to be able to coordinate their eyes, hands and mouth so that they can look at their food, pick it up and put it in their mouth. We also want them to be able to swallow food rather than spit it straight back out. Bear in mind that it does take practice to learn how to swallow, and lots of this is practice and experience, and that's what weaning is all about. If you're interested in weaning and starting solids and want an informative evidence-based guide, we do have our online course. Our online course is called Getting Started with Solids. It's all about introducing solid food with confidence. We talk about when, how, whether you do baby-led weaning, spoon-fed, which foods and meals to start with, which vitamins your baby needs, how to make it a fun and positive experience, which is really important, I think. We created the course in conjunction with Dr. Harriet Holm, who's a registered nutritionist, who was amazing. So I think it's really worthwhile having a look at that course if you're considering getting some help with weaning. There are some people out there, even sleep consultants in my profession, who still follow very old-fashioned advice. And they will say that when babies reach about 4 months, if sleep goes haywire, it's because they're hungry. It's absolutely not true. And number one, please remember that breast milk or formula have more calories than a pureed carrot. And most people start on vegetables. So please know that if you were actually looking at it from a perspective of filling them up is going to make them sleep better, then it's an absolute nonsense, because calorie for calorie, the milk is going to be better to fill them up. Also, often when we start solids, if we do it before our babies are ready, it can actually disturb sleep because their digestive systems are immature and they are getting ready to learn how to process those foods. And for some babies, it's just too soon if you start it too soon. And in fact, even if you wait for 6 months and baby is showing all these signs, it isn't necessarily going to improve sleep. All the other things around sleep are far more likely to improve it. And those things you can look at anytime. Sleep environment, is there something that could be made better and more conducive to a good night's sleep? I.e. bedding temperature, is something annoying them? Can we put something in to help them, like white noise, for example? There's lots of things we look at. Is there something in their routine we can change? Do they need shorter naps, longer naps, different bedtime, a different way of falling asleep at nap time? Could we change that routine to help them sleep better at night? And how they settle, and I've spoken about this loads. Those three things are far better to look at if you want to improve sleep than starting solids. The only time I think that there could be a grain of truth in this is if you've got a much older baby, you haven't started them on solids yet, and they really do need to be on solids at this point. Once babies get to 6 months plus, we do need to think about the critical nutrients that they need in their diet that they can't get from milk. Iron being one of those. Don't worry, they don't need to be mini Popeyes, like downing cans of spinach and eating steak. Well, actually, they can eat both of those things from 6 months, but they don't need to be having huge amounts. So don't worry about that. And it's very normal for babies just to have small amounts and be exploring these different types of food. And that's why lots of exposure is really, really key, and take it slowly. But we do need to think about the critical nutrients that they might start to need that they don't get from milk. And iron is one that we do see a lot that babies need more of as they're growing. So long and short, it's a false that they sleep better when they're on solids. Somebody has asked about sleep promoting stickers. Do they work? I don't know if that's truly a true or false question, but I would say false. They might be a placebo. And by placebo, we mean something that we use that might make things better, but medically or chemically, it's not actually doing anything. So sleep promoting stickers, I've seen them promoted a lot on social media. They tend to be like a little sticker, says it on the tin, and they will have some essential oils in them. So essential oils are not going to be something that knocks your baby out, okay? They're not like an anesthetic where you knock a child out. That's not how sleep works. And if essential oils did do that, they would be on prescription, okay? But what essential oils can do is make us feel relaxed, and they can help us associate or build associations with certain things. So, for example, if you use like a pillow spray that has lavender or something else really lovely, I love the smell of lavender as long as it's not too strong, you might spray that on your pillow and you start associating that with going to sleep, therefore it can kind of help. Or those who are keen on essential oils and use them maybe as part of their bedtime routine, where perhaps they do a bit of massage and they use a teeny drop of something or other in the oil or in the bath. And that might actually encourage them to have a calming, relaxing, predictable bedtime routine, which is probably more likely the thing that's helping with sleep. Or that these stickers are giving parents the confidence, bedtime's going to be a bit better tonight because we're using these stickers, so I'm a bit calmer, therefore my baby or child is feeding off my calm, it's making them calm, and they're able to go to sleep better. It might be that they're a placebo, it might be that they're creating a new sleep association that's positive, but do they actually work? No, I don't think they do, and I think you'd be better off just buying some essential oil if you really want to do that. Just be cautious around essential oils and babies. Make sure that you know what you're using is safe. There's lots of different oils you can buy online, so make sure it's a good brand. And don't use loads of it. Use a teeny tiny bit. I'd be sparing. Also, babies can't necessarily tell us if they don't like a smell. And everyone has our really individual tastes and preferences. And it might be that you use something and they're like, oh, I don't like this smell. It's too much. I prefer the smell of mum's skin, or her boob, or dad's skin, or his hair, or whatever it is. So just be sparing. This episode is brought to you by Just Chill Baby Sleep, the number one infant sleep consultancy in the UK and beyond. We really love sleep, and we want you to have all the information that you need about sleep at your fingertips. Our award-winning, self-led online courses can banish those bad nights and leave you feeling calm and in control, and most of all, well rested. For more information about our online courses and one-to-one support, please go to justchillbabysleep.co.uk. Listeners can also use the code JCPP for 10% off any online course or bundle. So sleep well. The next one, co-sleeping has negative impacts. This is really hard to say true or false. I would say true for some families, false for other families. I think that if it works for you and your family, your dynamic and your child, then no, it shouldn't have any negative impact. But it could start affecting your family. It could affect the parents' relationship if they have a partner and they're also in the bed. It could affect other siblings, so therefore the family dynamic as a whole. It could also be that that child isn't getting quality sleep and neither is the parents because they're disturbing each other. It depends what is going on. Some families will sleep really well together and everyone has a much more settled night's sleep. And in some cultures, it's really normal to co-sleep. I was talking about this with somebody at the weekend. She comes from a Filipino family and Filipinos generally share a bedroom and share a sleep space. So it's really, really normal in their culture. And that's just what everyone does. In the Western culture, generally, I do think it is accepted in certain cultures, certain families and groups in the UK. But for other people, it's a bit of a point of contention. I didn't like co-sleeping. I did co-sleep for the first 4 weeks of baby B's life because it just felt easier. He was trying to establish my milk supply and I was just exhausted. I was recovering from a C-section. It felt much easier than trying to put him in his own sleep space. As long as you follow safe co-sleeping guidance, which you can find at the Lullaby Trust, the baby sleep charity in the UK, it's all right. You put them on their back, they have their own blanket, you don't have pillows or adult bedding around them, all those kind of things. It can be okay. But sometimes the things that we shouldn't do can creep in quite easily. That I've seen photos of people where they're actually both sleeping on an adult pillow, which isn't safe. Babies sleeping kind of turned or on their front, it's not safe. They're under a duvet, it's not safe, in which case that definitely has a negative impact potentially because it's dangerous for baby. But really, it's about whether it works for your family. If you're doing it safely and everyone's happy, crack on. If you're not happy, you're doing it out of desperation and you don't know what else to do, that's going to have a negative impact on you and therefore your child. So that's when we would help you to move away from it. The next one, reflux babies sleep worse. I would say true if the reflux hasn't been solved. So what is baby reflux? Reflux is when a baby brings up milk during or shortly after feeding. It's very common and for lots of babies, it will get better as they get older. But it depends whether when they bring that milk up or when it hasn't necessarily come up, when there's pain involved, okay? Generally, medics will only intervene when they're not gaining weight, which I know can be really frustrating for so many families. But there are things that you'll be advised, like holding them upright after feeds, regular burping, thinking about how you're feeding them. One of the big tips I would give you if you are bottle feeding is don't shake the bottle. So if you're making formula for a bottle, don't shake it, stir it with a sterilized spoon. Because when you shake it, you're putting air bubbles in, which means they're drinking air bubbles and those bubbles are going to come out and they might bring milk up with them. That will kind of exacerbate reflux. I think we should probably do an episode on reflux specifically. And reflux can be a symptom of other things. So it can be a symptom potentially of a cow's milk allergy or some other allergy. And generally it can cause upset and discomfort. And obviously if our babies are in discomfort, it will affect sleep. If you think your baby is suffering from reflux, please speak to your GP or your health visitor to get some support with that. But yeah, while it's not solved, while you've not got to the root of it or while they've not grown out of it, then yes, I think sleep can be worse. It's always worth just checking on their latch as well if they're breastfeeding or their latch on the bottle if they're bottle feeding. So maybe getting some help from a feeding expert as well. The next one, feeding to sleep causes wake-ups. Ah, this is hard. It's true and false. I would say in most babies, true. because a lot of babies, if they're fed to sleep, they'll expect that between sleep cycles at night. But for some babies, they can be fed to sleep and sleep well all night. So it's really individual, but I would say 70% true, 30% false, if I can say that. There's nothing wrong with feeding to sleep if it works for you and your family. It's if it's not and it's not conducive and helping you get a settled night, that's when we might want to change it. Next, babies that nap in the day won't sleep at night. False, because most babies need to nap at some point during the day. If they nap too much in the day, you can get a reverse of day and night and they can become nocturnal, be awake all night and asleep all day, which you do not want. So if they sleep too much in the day, they might not sleep well at night. But I think phrase like this, I would say false. Next one, you can't sleep train until 6 months. True, if we are talking about what I would call formal sleep training, which might, not necessarily, but might involve some kind of controlled crying. From the evidence that we have and from my experience, I truly believe that that kind of sleep training is more effective from 6 months on. But under 6 months, I tend to do what I would call sleep shaping, which is working on routine and gently practicing how they settle. It's not about sleep training. Two is too old to sleep train. False, massive false. It is never, never too late to work on sleep. You are never a lost cause. Your child isn't broken. There's always something we can look at to try and help you improve things. Next one. Oh my gosh, this is a big topic. Overtiredness causes early wakes. I would say 90% false, 10% true. In the most part, early waking, I don't believe, is caused by overtiredness. It'll be caused by too much day sleep, too early bedtime, not being able to self-settle. In a nutshell, but I do have an episode all about early waking, so please refer back to that and have a listen. But generally, overtiredness, if they've had a day where they've done something really out of the ordinary, they normally nap, let's say, for 2.5 hours across the day, but you were out, you were here, you were everywhere, they weren't well, something else had jabs, God knows, something happened. They didn't sleep how they normally do and they were overtired when they went to bed. That can cause a disturbed night and waking early. But your baby isn't chronically overtired every single day, day in, day out. They might become overtired in a certain situation. I don't know, maybe after Christmas or something like that, or a weekend where you were with family, they just didn't nap and they were overstimulated and upset. They might have gone to bed and they were in that state and they fell asleep, but then they woke early because of that. So 90% false, 10% true in really specific scenarios. Next one. I've heard this loads and it's really bizarre. If first baby sleeps well, the second won't. I mean, it just sounds like an absolute old wives' tale. Every baby and child is an individual. It's got nothing to do with the order in which you give birth. I mean, think about it. There was that show, was it 23 Kids and Counting? Somebody had 23, was it 22? Either way, it's a lot of kids. 22 or 23 kids. Are you going to tell me there's a rule? Like, your first one will sleep well, your second won't, your third will, your 10th won't, your 12th will be amazing. Like, there's no rules. Every child, every baby is an individual. Next one, you can't potty train at night. True, you cannot potty train at night. A hormone needs to be developed in order for your child to be dry at night. This happens at different times with different children and you can't train them. You can't force them. And it's really unfair when people try to do that. What I would say is if they've been dry for a number of mornings when you've got them up and their pull up or their nappy isn't wet, give it a go. And some of them, you'll potty train them in the day, then all of a sudden they're just dry at night and it just happens naturally. But for lots of other children, it comes quite late and there's a lot of stigma and shame and guilt around it. But it's actually not anything you're doing. It's just something in your child. If you're ever concerned, please speak to your GP or your health visitor. If you're in the UK, if you are in another country, speak to your paediatrician or other medical team. Sometimes your GP or doctor might intervene if they get to kind of the age 7 or 8 and they're still wet at night. But generally in the UK here, we don't intervene before then. So there's absolutely no shame in it. the kidneys need to learn not to create output overnight, essentially, and this hormone helps that. So there's nothing you're doing wrong. And please, if you need help, reach out. We do actually have one-to-one potty training support now alongside our online course, which is amazing, by the way. But neither of those things will help at nighttime. They will help during the day. Next one, and this kind of links into a previous question about overtiredness and early wakes. Earlier bedtime makes them sleep later in the morning. I think it's a bit of a myth, to be honest, but I have seen it. I think you need to do what works for your child, and you'll find out by trial and error. You'll know quite quickly what's going to work. And that's why I always say to people, if they say it hasn't worked, give it some time. But generally, as a rule, I'd say later bedtimes mean later wake ups because we're looking at overall sleep requirement. It doesn't make sense. But for some children, for some reason, I have seen it where they've been going to bed too late. They've been getting overstimulated, upset, and they just needed to go to bed earlier and then they'd be fine. This one is a good one. Juicy. You can help baby self-settle without leaving them to cry on their own. Absolutely true. There's a big myth that you have to leave them crying on their own, like you're going to shut the door and leave them for 12 hours. That's not our approach. You can help them and support them with your presence there. Abso-bloody-lutely. And that is the bread and butter of what we do. The next one, the newborn phase is the hardest. Ooh, this is totally subjective. And I would say it depends on the child. My youngest was quite an easy newborn. And my second was an easy newborn as well. The first, not so much. But maybe because I was a brand new parent, so it felt really hard and shocking. And like, I was like, what have I done? This is really bloody hard. Maybe it just got easier because I knew what I was doing and felt a bit more relaxed. I think being relaxed actually is key. And also it depends if you're somebody who's had a baby with like reflux or allergies or something else going on health-wise, you might have had a really brutal newborn phase and you breeze through the other phases. But some people have quite an easy newborn and then when they get to toddlerhood, woo, they're like, this is hard. Give me a baby that can't move any day. So yeah, that's a tricky one and it's totally subjective. But if you are struggling with the newborn phase, please reach out. Our 0-5 online course was designed to help with this phase and support you. One of the things, so I used to teach baby massage and I really, really rate it, by the way. I rate massage for everyone. I bloody love a massage. I still massage my kids. I massaged my nearly 11-year-old's feet last night and she was saying, oh, mummy, it feels so nice. And it can be a way to connect with your baby or your child or your partner. I love anyone massaging me, to be honest. It just got me thinking about the newborn phase and I massaged my first. We went to baby massage classes, but I didn't really get into it because I think we only made it to one class and she was like asleep or something. And it's quite common. So when I used to teach it, the parents would turn up and some babies would need to sleep or feed or they just weren't having it that day, so you don't necessarily get hands-on. But if you practice it when they are happy and content and receptive, whatever time of day it is, it can really help you bond, which I think helps the newborn experience, and to take stock, slow down, and just remember why you're doing what you're doing, because it creates that oxytocin, our love hormone, and gets it going. So I included deliberately some baby massage in our 0-5 months online course if you're interested in that. But lots of, if you're in the UK, children's centres offer subsidised baby massage, and you can look it up on YouTube as well. As long as you're gentle and they're in the mood, you can't go too wrong. But yeah, it just got me thinking about slowing down and enjoying it and just remembering that everything is a season. And this is where being a parent for the second or third time, I think you feel more relaxed because you know, okay, this is hard. This is challenging. I'm tired, but I know there is going to come a day where they do sleep through the night. I won't be so tired. I'll have some more time for me. I'm not always going to have a baby hanging off me. I'm not always going to have nappies to change. I'm not always going to have pooey baby grows that I have to soak. It can feel relentless when you're in the moment, and I have been there, as have all of my team. And if you're listening now and you're pacing the streets and you're feeling alone, I hope that this podcast can give you some solace and some hope to know that there is better sleep and a different phase, a different season on the horizon. I always say parenting comes in seasons, and some days you'll have a brilliant day. You'll feel like, oh, I am smashing it today. We're out of the house. We're all happy. We're fed. We are getting some fresh air. We're doing this. We're doing that. And you have a great day. And other days you're like, I am dragging myself through treacle to even get dressed. If you are struggling with your mental health or you feel like you might have postnatal depression or signs that you're not coping, please reach out to your GP, health visitor, or even a friend or a family member and let them know that you're not coping, because that time that you tell someone can really, really change things. And I don't want anyone out there struggling on their own. But yeah, I've gone on about that point, but I just want you to know, because I found that newborn phase really brutal. In fact, I found it hard all three times, but like I said, it was kind of different, more sat in the knowledge that it's not forever. So I hope you have enjoyed the true false round. I could do more of these if you guys like it, so let me know. I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. As always, I'd appreciate you leaving a review, rating it, or subscribing to it. It means the absolute world. Please spread the word, keep listening, and I really hope that you sleep well. Loads of love. Bye.